but is resting unto the Lord. The theological orientation of our Sabbath rest is God-centered, not self-centered. I wish we could give a lecture on that, because this is very important. Many times people feel, well, we don't need the Sabbath anymore. We have the short working week. We have 2-3 days for rest and relaxation. This kind of reasoning fails to realize, ignores that the rest of the Sabbath is not a self-centered rest. It's a God-centered rest. It's a 24-hour period when we give priority to God in our thinking, in our living. This means that all what we do on the Sabbath, whether we participate in a formal church service or whether we participate in informal fellowship, recreation, visitation, all of it should be seen as an act of worship, because all of it springs out of a heart who has decided to honor God on his holy day. Now, this dear lady, this Judy Finn, she wants to invest Sunday with the meaning and with the experience of the Sabbath. You cannot do that. Because historically speaking, Sunday began not as a day consecrated to the Lord, but as an hour. When some Christians went to church early on the Dies Solis, on the day of the sun, and then they spent the rest of the day, you know, working, business as usual. Excuse me, in spite of the effort that were later made by Constantine in 321 with the promulgation of the famous Sunday law, in spite of the effort that were later made by church council, by popes and Puritans to make Sunday into a total day of rest and worship, the truth of the matter, fellow believers, is that Sunday began as an hour and has largely remained the hour, not the day of rest and worship unto the Lord. And the recognition of this historical reality has led the Catholic Church, while I was there at the Vatican, we were discussing it 30 years ago, while I was there, led the Vatican to anticipate Sunday Mass to Saturday night. Have you heard of the Saturday night Mass? Have you heard about it? And did you know what? It's interesting that the Protestants are following the example of the Catholic. I was just reading an article in the Sunday magazine of the Lord's Day Alliance of the United States, and the title of the article is Saturday Night Live at Church. And it says that there are already 4,000 Protestant churches, including Willow Creek there in Chicago, that have Saturday evening service to accommodate sometimes the yuppies who don't care to get up on Sunday morning. They can fulfill their Sunday obligation on Saturday night. In fact, it's a very interesting book. I did not bring it with me because I have so much other stuff to bring along, entitled The Future of the Christian Sunday by Professor Christopher Kissling. He's a Catholic liturgist. You know what he says? Sunday began as an hour, has always been the hour, not the day of rest and worship unto the Lord. There is no point, he says, to try to make Sunday into a holy day today. Why? It has never been a holy day. It has always been the holy hour. So his proposal is to save the hour, not the day. How? By anticipating the Sunday hour of worship to a more convenient time of the week. He feels that the Saturday night is not enough. Most people during the summer months particularly have already taken off for the weekend by Friday afternoon. Isn't it true? There are not too many people left in town for the Saturday night religious service. So the proposal is to have a fluctuating worship during the week. A businessman who knows he's going to be away for the weekend, he can simply call his dependent workers and say, hey, let's have a Tuesday morning gospel breakfast meeting and fulfill our Sunday worship obligation. So if the Lord doesn't see us in church next Sunday, he's not going to be upset with us because we fulfilled our Sunday obligation on Tuesday morning. Are you with me? Now, that may be good enough for Sunday keeping, but it's not good enough for Sabbath keeping. And the reason I'm saying to you, fellow believers, is because even we as Adventists sometimes are tempted to observe the Sabbath as the hour of worship rather than the day of rest and worship unto the Lord. Have you ever known about the closet Adventists? They are those who go to church for the divine service, put on their nice Sabbath clothes. Then when they go home, they hang their Sabbath clothes in the closet. They close the closet and they close the Sabbath with the closet. Are you with me? And then the rest of the day, you know, they turn on the TV, they go to places of entertainment, buying food, buying service, and so forth and so forth. And I believe that this is another form of attack against the Sabbath. We may call it the existential attack, which perhaps we may not be talking much about this afternoon, but it's also very real. But coming back to this lady, you notice she was trying to make Sunday into the Christian Sabbath by observing it as 24 hours to the Lord, when that is not the history and the theology of Sunday. Let me refer to another interesting example. This is an article entitled Rediscovering the Sabbath that was published last September in Christianity Today, the most widely read evangelical magazine in the United States. And this lady, Dorothy Buss, she says that the Sabbath is the most challenging and necessary spiritual discipline for contemporary Christian. Oh, she speaks very eloquently about the Sabbath. She says, as the new century dawns, the practice of Sabbath keeping may be a gift, waiting to be unwrapped, a confirmation that we are not without help in shaping the renewing ways of life for which we long. She speaks of the Sabbath as a gift that is waiting to be unwrapped, a gift that can provide a remedy to some of our modern problems. But what is the problem with this article? Well, the problem with the article is that she wants to unwrap the gift of the Sabbath by squeezing into the so-called, we could call it, the Sabbath gift box. Sandy, she wants to squeeze sand into it. And again, it doesn't work. Because as I told you a moment ago, Sandy is not the Sabbath. There must be a reason for observing a day. If I was to propose to you Americans, by the way, I'm still an Italian, so I've been around for a little while, but I have not yet decided to become a Yankee because my accent is still Italian. Unless I lose my accent, how can I become an American? At any rate, if I was to propose to you Americans to celebrate Independence Day, not on the 4th of July when it is so hot, but on the 10th of September, you would rebel at such a proposal because you cannot invest another day with the historical meaning and significance, you know, of July the 4th. And I believe the same is true when it comes to the Sabbath Sunday question. And this is very much revealed in the article, because she wants to invest Sunday with the theology of the Sabbath, but then she doesn't even know what to do with Sunday, how to observe Sunday. For example, she asked the question, what besides church going is Christian Sabbath keeping? That by Sabbath keeping she means Sunday keeping. In other words, what is a Christian supposed to do besides going to church on Sunday? And she cannot figure it out. If she suggested in the article, for example, that she says that buying and selling, paying bills, preparing tax return, making list of things to do in the coming week may not be the best activity. But she cannot give a moral conviction and compulsion to the consecration of the Sabbath time to the Lord, because that is not the essence of Sunday keeping. Are you with me? I'm trying to show you how some of these dear people have a great burden to rediscover the Sabbath, how the article says, and yet, unfortunately, they are a bit short-changed because they cannot give to the principle and practice of Sunday keeping, you know, the moral basis and compulsion of the Sabbath. Now, this rediscovery of the Sabbath has also taken place in what we may call the academia, the scholarly community. You might be interested to know, fellow believers, that in recent years there have been a number of international Sabbath conferences sponsored by secular universities, which interested in re-examining the relevance of the biblical Sabbath for today. Let me refer to two instances, two examples very quickly. The first is the International Sabbath Conference that was sponsored by the University of Denver. This is the university paper, and there is an article entitled Institute to Host International Sabbath Symposium. And it's interesting how this conference came about. the director of the Institute for Judeo-Christian Study, Professor Wagner, had just finished reading my green book entitled Divine Rest for Human Restlessness. And he called me one night. In fact, the essence of the conversation is right here on the paper. He said, I'm so impressed by your love and commitment to the Sabbath that I think, he said, it would be a golden opportunity to bring together Catholic, Protestant, Jews to re-examine the relevance of the Sabbath for today. And he invited me, he says, would you be willing to come and be one of our keynote speakers? We'll refund your expenses, give you a honorarium. Would you be willing to come? I said, Professor Wagner, you don't have to repeat it twice. Once is enough. I'd be glad to come at my own expenses. And let me tell you, it was a thrilling experience to spend 3 days with about 80 scholars who came from Germany, from Switzerland, from France, from England, from the State of Israel, from different parts of the world. We came together for 3 days to re-examine the Sabbath for today. And interesting enough, some of the participants wanted to rediscover the Sabbath as a model for Sunday keeping, but there were others who really were interested to re-examine the biblical Sabbath as the seventh-day Sabbath. By the way, there were two scholars who were given, this is the book that was published as a result of that conference, The Sabbath in Jewish and Christian Tradition. The chapters of this book are basically the paper that were presented there at this International Sabbath Symposium. And there were two professors who were given the assignment of responding to my paper. One of them was a Catholic Dominican scholar. His name is Father James Kennedy. And I tell you, it was quite a thrill to listen to him. I was expecting him to challenge, you know, some of the points of my paper, because I did not beat around the bush. I really articulated some of the discoveries of my investigation on the role of the papacy in changing the Sabbath to Sunday. I dealt with the whole social, pagan, you know, and papal influence, and I thought that he may have been offended. But you know what? He was very nice. In fact, right here, this is the proof, the chapter that he wrote. He says, I read Dr. Bacciocchi's book From Sabbath to Sunday when I was studying for my liturgy degree at Notre Dame University. I used that again in my study at the Catholic University in Washington, D.C., and I found it unfailingly scholarly, readable, and convincing. And you should see, and he did a beautiful job. Do you know what he said? I couldn't believe it. He said, I'm not prepared for a confrontation. After the eloquent presentation, and after having read some book, I would rather make my own confessional statement. I would rather share with you my meditation on the Sabbath. And he gave a beautiful meditation on the Sabbath. In fact, he speaks about here, in the book, it says, we humans need to experience God's sanctifying presence. So we keep the Sabbath to, number one, follow God's example. Number two, acknowledge God as our creator. Number three, participate in God's rest and blessing. The Sabbath, he says, is a sign of our covenant between God and us. We look back to the past perfect creation and forward to the ultimate consummation. Don't you feel that this is great? You know what I did? You wouldn't believe it. I sprang forward after his presentation. I shook his hand. I said, Father Kennedy, you have so much impressed me that I feel that I ought to extend you the right hand of fellowship into the Seventh-day Adventist Church. You deserve to become a honorary member of my own Adventist Church. He looked at me surprised. I don't think I'm prepared to accept it here and now, he said. You know, friends, for me it's exciting. You know why it's exciting to attend this International Sabbath Conference? Because what I told you at the beginning, I grew up in a climate of rejection, confrontation, ridicule for Sabbath keeping. People were always looking down to me. They were like, "Du sei un Judeo." You know what that means? You are a Jew. And being called a Jew right after the Second World War, when 6 million of them had been liquidated. It was not a compliment, you understand that. Now nobody says to me, you are a Jew. But they look to me, to you, to our church, as an example to emulate. That makes me feel very good. And I want to share in this context, this last document of my dialogue with the Lord's Day Alliance of the United States. Have you ever heard of the Lord's Day Alliance of the United States? It's an ecumenical organization representing 21 denominations that is committed to promote the observance of Sunday through legislation, publications, education. And to make the long story short, I sent a copy of my dissertation to the executive director of the Lord's Day Alliance. His name is Dr. James Westbury. And he responded with the most gracious letter, thanking me for the book, congratulating me for the work I had done. And then he says in the third paragraph, it would be a great joy to meet and talk with you anytime such a meeting could be arranged. Such a conversation would add to my knowledge and give me additional ideas about how the Lord's Day should be observed. If you propose a time and a place for such a get-together, it would be an honor for me to meet and talk with you. I should hope that you might be able to visit me here in our Atlanta office. Well, what happened? I extended him an invitation to come to Andrews. That was about 10 years ago, by the way. He came on a December cold Sabbath. We spent a delightful Sabbath together. He was our guest of honor in Sabbath school, divine service in our home. You should have seen him eating those good Italian Sabbath lasagne that my wife makes. He was just about licking the plate, asking all the time what was it that made them so good. I told Dr. Westbury, there is la salsa sabbatica. You know what that is? The Sabbath sauce that makes them good. And he says, could you ask your wife for the recipe? I would like to teach my wife how to add some gusto to our Sabbath keeping. So when I wrote my last book on the Sabbath in the New Testament, some of you may have noticed that I have a chapter of recipes. Some people cannot figure out how you can have a gastronomical chapter in a theological book. Well, I was trying to be nice to Dr. Westbury. I promised him those recipes, and so we, instead of one, we gave him 20. Now, what was interesting about this experience, that when I took him to the airport that Saturday night, he said, Sam, this was the most delightful Sabbath I have ever celebrated in my life. He was impressed by the atmosphere of peace and tranquility prevailing in our churches, in our home, on our campus. He said, I wish the whole world could witness what I have witnessed here today. And then he says, would you be willing to come to Atlanta, Georgia, and be the keynote speaker at the annual meeting of the Lord's Day Alliance of the United States? I would love you to share with them what you have shared with me today. So, Dr. Westbury, don't repeat it twice. I always believe that God gives us the opportunity, and we must take advantage of them. Isn't it true? Believe me, it was an incredible experience that night to be there in Atlanta, Georgia, to speak to 150 religious leaders representing about 21 denominations, 36 of them, including Norman Vincent Peale. I have his letter right here. Norman Vincent Peale wrote to me requesting my Sabbath books and wrote me a beautiful comment. Like Dr. Peale says that the book of Divine Rest for Human Restlessness has a profound meaning for people today, for whom the Sabbath can have a healing effect and an uplifting influence. By the way, I also have a little picture here of Dr. Westbury and myself that we took during the visit. But you know what is the exciting part of this story? What I'm about to tell you may sound to you incredible. In fact, it's hard to believe it. Would you believe it? That just before he passed away, a couple of years ago, he wrote to me some nice letters. I have them right here. And in one letter he says, for example, I thought of you a million times. Your books are on my desk. I see them every day. I'm grateful for you and for all what you have done to the cause of Christ and of his Sabbath day. I wonder if you could do me a big favor. This is what I have in mind. I have been wondering if it were possible for me to contribute financially to the establishment of an endowed chair for Sabbath studies. When I received this letter, I called him up to get a little bit of clarification. I said, Dr. Westbury, what do you have in mind? Are you thinking about the possibility of an endowed chair for Sabbath study at Andrews? Oh, that would be great. Why don't you find out how much it would take to establish such an endowed chair? So I remember I spoke with our dear friend who tragically passed away, Dr. Gerhard Hassel. I'm sure that he's a friend of many of us. And I asked Gerhard, how long, how much does it take to have an endowed chair? And Gerhard told me that it takes about $500,000 to have an endowed chair at the Seminary for Hispanic Study, which is about $500,000, the interest of which is used to pay the salary of a professor. So when I called Dr. Westman and I told him about the $500,000, he said, well, Sam, that's beyond my means. He said, I could come up with about $150,000 if you could find a way of raising the rest of the money. Well, I told him I would see what I could do, but he passed away before this dream could come true. But isn't it beautiful, fellow believers and friends? Here was a man who devoted about the last 20 years of his life, you know, to the Lord's Day Alliance of the United States, an organization committed to promote, you know, the observance of Sunday. And now, on his sunset days, on his deathbed, he felt the conviction, the compulsion to promote the observance of the biblical Sabbath. What do you say to that? Isn't it beautiful? This is very encouraging. And I think this perhaps leads us also to the next point of the presentation. I'd like to talk very quickly now about Christians today who are eager to rediscover the Sabbath, not as a model for Sunday keeping, but they want to rediscover the actual biblical seven-day Sabbath that you and I are observing today. Now, you and I perhaps, not I because I have become aware of it, but there are many Adventists who may not realize how many Sabbatarians there are there out there. How many people today who are becoming interested in Sabbath keeping. Again, I'd like to share with you some few examples very quickly. I just received a few days ago a newly published book. The title of the book is Catch Your Breath, God's Invitation to Sabbath Rest. It's written by a professor from the University of Michigan, Don Postema, and this book is strictly about the seven-day Sabbath. There is no reference to Sunday whatsoever. And what is interesting is that this professor was trying to find inner peace, inner rest through Eastern meditation, through various forms of meditation, but he found that you don't have to go far to the east because the Sabbath, he says, meets you where you are. He says, the search for peace is in the air today. How often I hear people pleading for relief from stress, for freedom from the rat race, for time to relax, for quality time with the family and friends, for opportunity to touch the deeper recesses of their hearts, to reach out to the needy. And then he talks about what people are willing to do, to go places, to take pills, drugs, alcohol, to find inner peace, rest and release. And he says, yet Christian believers don't need to go very far because he says it is as close as their Bible. If they only open their Bible, they discover that the Sabbath, he says, is a gift from God given to humanity right from the beginning. A vacation with God, planned from the beginning to be enjoyed into eternity. I challenge you to read this little book that just came out. It's published by the Christian Reformed Church of Grand Rapids, but it deals exclusively with the Sabbath. I read through the book. I have not found any reference to Sunday. Let me just give you some other example of this rediscovery of the Sabbath. I hold here a very interesting magazine. It's called Restore Magazine. This magazine is published by an organization which is called, what was, they refer to themselves as the Restoration Foundation. Restoration Foundation, and they said that their only goal is to restore the biblical Jewish heritage of the Christian faith. Now, the contributors to this journal are mostly scholars, PhD people. I spoke with Professor Garr, and I asked him, but do you have any religious affiliation? Not really. He says the members of our organization belong to all sorts of, you know, denominations, and we have no religious or political agenda. They have already invited me 3 times to speak in the radio program in Dallas. They hooked me up by phone, and the name of the program is The Roots of Yeshua, The Roots of Jesus, basically. The concern of these people is to rediscover the Jewish heritage of the Christian faith, because they say that for too long Christianity has been plagued by a theology of contempt toward the Jews, to the point that Christians today have difficulty to appreciate the precious Jewish heritage, particular dispensationalist, you know, and this new covenant theology try to portray, you know, the Jews, so to speak, as second-class citizens. If you know anything about dispensationalism, you know, they believe in the Jewish dispensation, Christian dispensation, which for them basically is 2 plans of salvation. There is going to be the rapture of the church. Eh? Have you heard about the rapture? And after the rapture, 7 years of tribulation, when God is going to lash out on the Jews as he has never done before upon their nation, and then eventually, even after the millennium, when God's eternal kingdom is established, according to this dispensationalist, you know, Jewish people are going to be second-class citizens. The Christian will be first-class citizen. It's incredible when you study, I mean, this whole eschatological construct of dispensationalism. It is so colored and conditioned by hate for the Jews. And this is an organization which feels that the time has come to get over it, to stop hating and start loving. And so they are very interested to rediscover the Jewish heritage. And right here in this magazine, there is a beautiful article, How to Have a Family Shabbat, How to Observe the Sabbath in Your Own Family. I'm going to be meeting with these people on October the 10th in Denver. They are going to have a convention. They told me they don't expect a large group, about 100 or 200 at most, but they have asked me to spend 3 days. They wanted me to stay for a week, but I have to be in Croatia the October the 3rd. The Pope is going to be there on that weekend, and our Adventist people, they are having their annual Congress, and they thought it would be nice to have an Adventist Pope there, somebody who has studied at the Vatican, to give a little competition to the Holy Father while he's there. You follow me? But so I told them I could not stay the whole week, so I will be flying home for 1 day, get a new set of clothes, a little bit of change in my underwear, so to speak, and proceed there